Kershaw.
Hi.
So here I am, Babelito, reporting from Chicagoland, as always. I am here to introduce an amazing interview, but first, I just want to tell you about my weekend, because, you know, why not? Because it's our podcast, and we can do whatever the fuck we want. So anyway, so this weekend has been crazy. I don't know if you follow my Instagram stories, but my nephews and my niece and my nephew are here with my sister. Also, my husband's family just got here last night. Girl, what is it with us Mexicans? We just pile on top of each other. So there's people in the living room. There's people in the dining room. There's people in the guest room. There's people in our room. It's crazy, but I'm so, so happy and reminded of how lucky I am. So this weekend, a couple of things happened. We went to the Museum of Science and Technology in the campus, right outside the campus of the University of Chicago. That space is one of the most amazing museums, but also one of the scariest museums here in Chicago. Amazing because there's so many amazing activities for kids, but also because you get, it's almost like a science museum for everybody, but augmented. Like they put some drugs into it or something. It's amazing. But there's a whole section dedicated to a submarine. And a submarine that I guess, I don't even know the story. All I know is that they got it from the Nazis. It is an interactive exhibition. It's gigantic. You walk from one part of the museum to a whole entire part that was constructed just to house this submarine. It is a narrative of the nation. Going in there was about patriotism, more specifically, white supremacist patriotism, and it was scary. I wanted to run from that space. But it was also a reminder that as institutions, museums have a lot of work to do. There's like parts, like in the hallways, for example, there were parts where they were telling you the different attacks in World War II and the development of the submarine as a technology and the way that soldiers lived in those spaces. And again, it was augmenting this idea that we are the greatest space, the greatest country in the world. But as my sister was reminding me, shout out to my sister of cities. You may know her from the Quinceañeras episode. But as she was reminding me, she said, it's interesting how you go to Germany and you have a completely different narrative about the U.S. You go to Mexico, you have a different narrative about the U.S. But then you're in a space like that museum, and you also get a completely different narrative, a narrative that augments nationalism. And it's something that we see in a lot of museums. It also reminds me, for example, of what's happening right now in Paris. So as you guys may know, the Cathedral of Notre Dame almost fell apart, and it was on fire. It is a tragedy. Of course, a lot of Mexicans, they were identifying because there's a chapel of the Virgen de Guadalupe. So I've known so many people that go there and they're like, oh my God, we're represented. Guara, guara, la cuchara. Regardless of your feelings of colonization and what you may think about Europe and the history of the Catholic Church, this church is amazing and it is an achievement of what humans can accomplish, not only as architects, but just as humans in general, because this sort of programs developed over hundreds of years, different type of style. Many times these churches were constructed with private and public money. It's very interesting to look at the history of Gothic cathedrals in France and also parts of in other parts of Europe. But I just find out this morning that, for example, the U.S. government is going to give some aid to reconstruct the church. Shut the fuck up. Like, what? ¿Qué? Like, as mi suegra will say. I don't understand this. We have our own fucking colonies, Puerto Rico, you know, call it whatever you want to call it. But, like, the treatment of Puerto Ricans by the U.S. government has been so dumb and ridiculous. And the treatment of other spaces, there's like there's so many tragedies that have happened around the United States where the U.S. is just hiding. There are black churches that have been burned. Like, where is the aid for those spaces? Where is the aid for real needs that we have as U.S. citizens in this country? That's gone. Pero se quema una iglesia que está en todos los art history books, and all of a sudden you want to help? Why do I mention this in relationship to the museum? Because museums, just like this government, is always attaching itself, always attaching themselves, sorry, to a legacy of European history. And that is something that we cannot forget. When you go to a museum in the United States, how do they look? The facade looks like Greek temples. Think about the Art Institute. Think about so many other museums around the world. And this is not new. A lot of people know this. You go into the spaces and there's rooms and rooms and rooms and rooms reserved for Greek history, for Roman history, reserved for how the United States is attached to that legacy. That attaches to that legacy, to that history, and to me, in my view, history of oppression and colonization. Just like that space with that submarine in this crazy, crazy museum. Again, if you haven't been there, of course you should go. It's an amazing museum. But think about these things next time you go to a museum. Think about these stories. Think about how us as a society in the U.S., we're complacent to these stories. Every time you reposted a picture of you outside of Notre Dame, but then you completely ignore what happened in Puerto Rico or the tragedies that happen in the South or everything else that is happening in this country. Think about that. Think about how you, by following a trend, in a way, you are also being part of the system. I am complacent too. We all play our part and we all have our issues. But at the same time, we cannot forget. We cannot forget when we do that. When we do the next Instagram post, when we see a story online, or we're like, we do hashtag spare strong. Or I don't know. I didn't even pay attention. Luckily, I have a lovely family that kept me away from social media this weekend, and that makes me happy. We ate so much amazing food. We went to, there's a place called Pizzeria Uno, which apparently it's a it's a deep dish pizza place in downtown. It is out of control, downtown Chicago. It is out of control, you guys. It is amazing. It's so good. But I guess the story behind the creation of this space or deep dish, I don't know, is based on some gringo or some Italian that wanted to put together a Mexican dish, y le salió el tiro por la culata, so he created deep dish instead. So I guess deep dish is the original Mexican salad bowl. Is it? I don't know. Do you have more information? Send us your letters, send us your email so we can talk about deep dish. Because actually a listener told me, what I'm going to say, a week ago, I forgot her name. She said, you have been in Chicago for over 6 months and you still yet to mention deep dish pizza. I like New York pizza. I am growing, especially after eating in Pizzeria Uno. I'm growing, you know, some. Ya me está gustando. Ya está buena. But this whole story behind Mexican food and deep dish. What? Do you know more? Please let me know. But anyway, so that's been my weekend, just hanging out with my family, going to museums, enjoying the weather, and just very excited to be able to record. As you guys know, 5e5 has a crazy schedule, and we have several interviews already scheduled in the roster for you guys. And this week is my turn. Last week was 5e5's turn, an amazing, amazing interview. And this week is my turn to continue to talk to people that I admire and I love here in Chicago. This week is the turn of Lester Ray. And Lester Ray is a local musician. You're going to hear everything about his process, about how his mother's feminism influenced his queerness, and how that comes up in his music. Towards the end, he tells us amazing recommendations of local Chicago bands. And then after that, I inserted a little surprise. I hope Fabi doesn't get mad, but you'll hear it. It's a little PSA from my nephew and my niece, again, that are visiting me. So without much further ado, I've never said that phrase, and I didn't know if I was going to say it right because I've only heard it in movies and TV and in presentations, but now it was my turn. So without much further ado, aquí les dejo la entrevista con Lester Ray. Que show, audience of Latinx Holoncheum. Here I am in my aposento in Pilsen in Chicago. And I'm here because I have a very special guest. And I'm going to let him introduce himself and we're going to get into it. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Lester Ray es el nombre, uh-huh. Aquí de Chicago, boricua, artista, cantante.
Hey.
Yeah, just doing it here in Chicago, loving it.
So Lester Ray is an amazing local musician. I've met him through what now it's my new roommate, Katia. Shout out Katia Perez. We went to a social of Latinx artists. Shout out to Alcahuete Social. I keep calling it Molcajete Social, but it's Alcahuete Social. And I met you and I met your girl.
Vico. Uh-huh.
Yes, Vico. Shout out to Vico. And we hit it off. And then you had a listener party for your record. You guys were so nice to invite me. And yeah. Then I saw you again yesterday at Los Walters. What do you think of the show?
Okay, so this is embarrassing to admit, but I got out of work really late.
Yeah.
And I drove thinking I was going to catch a show. And then when I got there, everybody was already walking out.
Oh, that's when I saw you.
Yeah. So I'm like, shit. Like, I showed up really late. I didn't know that they were going to play so early. I thought that maybe something was going to happen first.
Right.
And that maybe si yo llego a las 10:15, like, it won't be a big deal.
Yeah.
But no, it was over. But, like, the beautiful thing of it was that all my friends were there, and I realized that a lot of Puerto Ricans from the entire, like, Chicago diaspora, the community, they were there. And it just made me feel, because sometimes I feel like as a Puerto Rican, I'm, like, alone in Chicago. Right, but we're right here, but we're just really spread out. So I might not, like, bump into them at the local cafe,
uh-huh.
But, you know, we're all here. And Los Walters were able to bring, like, all these folks together, and it was
amazing. That I saw, yeah, a flag.
Yeah.
There was a lot of, like, I heard the accent a lot. I was like, this is so cool, mm-hmm, that it's just not your usual, like, Chicanx like,
yeah,
audience. It was like a very diverse audience. It was pretty, and the,
yeah,
I'm gonna tell you, it was fucking amazing. But I've also been waiting to see them for a while, so
yeah,
shout out to Los Walters. But before we get into more about who you are and what you do here in Chicago,
uh-huh,
tell me a little bit more about what you ate today. Like, we're Latinos who line, so we have to talk about,
God,
this stuff. Yes.
So today I've been rushing, putting up posters and flyers for the show coming up.
Right.
Let's see, what I had
yesterday. What you had yesterday for lunch?
I had coffee today and pastries. But yesterday, I think it was just pastries también.
Damn.
Yo, the last 2 days I've been on pastries. It's,
wow,
not good.
Very revelatory.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my gosh. But 3 days ago, I had Colombian food, and there's a Colombian spot right by my house.
Nice.
That's like a block away. I'm like, 3 days ago, I had a good meal. Like, so that's horrible.
When you go, like, I'm assuming that you've been on tour before, right?
Yeah.
So when you go on tour and you need your Puerto Rican fix, or you need, yeah, your Latinx food fix, what do you do? Like, because I know there's some cities where you just can't find it. Like, what is it that you end up eating all the time where you're on tour?
Man, when I'm on tour, I definitely try to find salads.
Mm.
I have to, because I'm on the road and gas station after gas station, I cannot be on pastries. I cannot be on hot dogs or all this, like, horrible
pizza,
food.
The cardboard, yeah.
Yeah, that's just, I'm going to be, like, getting off every 2-3 hours to use the bathroom. It's like, nah, I need to, like, get something healthy in my system.
Yeah.
So I look for salads, yogurt. I try to stay healthy on tour.
Right.
I think I do better on tour than I do, like, when I'm here in the city.
Yeah, because you're comfortable here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, like, when I'm on road trips, that's the worst. We actually drove here from LA. It took us 3.5 days.
Wow.
And we did nothing but fast food.
Yeah.
Girl, let me tell you, by the third day, I was in a bad mood. Yeah. All the food tasted gross, so I get that salad. But you cannot be eating salad and driving at the same time.
No. So like, the first tour I took to South by Southwest, to Austin, I did the fast food thing. Because I was like, oh, this is my first time in Texas, and what's Whataburger? And what's
Whataburger.
And yeah, yes. So I was just on a fast food binge, and yeah, it was not good. Mm-mm. It just wasn't. I wasn't in a good mood.
It messed up with your mood. Yes. Yeah,
it really did. And I remember one of my friends was like, why are you being such a diva? I'm like, he started calling me Mariah. Like, what? He's like, Mariah Carey over here.
Because you don't want to have pizza every day.
Yeah. But man, after that, I learned. I was like, okay, let me just find a salad. Salads sometimes aren't the best at gas stations tampoco, pero man, they're way better than the chili hot dog,
right.
cardboard pizza.
Which reminds me, I need to get all the ingredients because we're going to eat hot dogs today. Okay, so tell me a little bit about Lester. I want to find out about, because I feel like you have a double life. Like, you have your career, which is pretty badass, and then you have your music career, which is also pretty badass. So tell me a little bit about what you do and then how you got into this whole music business here in Chicago.
Yeah. So I always say, so my stage name is Lester Ray, and my real name is Ray Lester. Okay. it's literally just a flip.
Uh-huh.
I went with Ray Lester Irizarry is mi nombre, pero Irizarry was too complicated to try to get people to say, and I was just like, you know what? I want you to listen to my music, not necessarily learn how to say my last name.
Right.
So I switched it to Lester Ray. Pero I like to refer to Ray as the individual that has to work the 9-to-5 schedule, that has to grind, make sure he pays all his bills on time.
Right. Like we all do. You know, living off of your art, it's a privilege in this country.
Yeah, it really, really is. And there's so many levels to that. So I work at Old Town School of Music. It's an amazing nonprofit. It's one of the largest nonprofits in the nation that teaches music.
Right.
And I'm not a teacher there. I do ticket sales and I work at the front desk. So if anyone ever swings by and wants to say hi, ahí estoy.
What's the name of the organization again?
Old Town School of Folk Music.
Okay.
Yeah. They, like, last night they actually had, I forgot the style of music, but it was a master of all styles that were traditional folk styles in Iraq. So they invited a singer from Iraq to come through and, like, perform, like, various styles of music. So they have a lot of, like, what they call quote-unquote world music.
Right.
Yeah.
Those terms.
Yeah, they still stick to those, like, old-school institutional terms.
Right.
But I still appreciate, like, the Colombian groups that come through, the Ecuadorian groups, the Iraqi groups, like, all the...
That's
the
so
bands
cool.
that come through are really legit. They're really dope. So that's, I'm still near music, even though my, like, 9-to-5 job is more like ticket sales. And what got me into music, what got me into, like, the idea of creating this stage name and marketing and pushing my music more formally as opposed to just creating beats in my bedroom and just hoping somebody would listen.
Right. Make a blog.
Yeah.
SoundCloud.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. What got me more serious was graduating school and just being like, ya yo cumplí con mis padres, ya yo cumplí conmigo.
¿De qué te graduaste?
I switched my major from philosophy to something called community leadership and civic engagement.
That's like black and white. What made you go from, was it continental philosophy or?
It was general, like I was taking philosophy. I already took 101 in like community college. So I was like taking... what are absolute truths and writing papers on just how do you know that you're not really a brain in some sort of machine imagining all this? How do you not know that maybe life just started yesterday and everything that you remember are just memories that have been programmed in you? And I was just like, you know, this is fun to think about, but this is not going to get me money or a job or anything.
Right.
So I got into music.
No te pasó lo que a mí, that I started philosophy for a while and I was like, this is just whiny white people who don't understand who they are. So I got to do something else with my life.
Yeah. Yo, de vera, like I was one of the only brown kids in the class.
Right.
But that just tends to be that way in college también. Like even no matter what major. But when I did civic engagement, there were a lot more people of color in that major. But the major still was very... new, and it couldn't call itself a nonprofit managerial major because there was a master nonprofit at the school.
I see.
So they didn't want to like get in their lane. Mm-hmm. But essentially, it was like a bachelor's degree that got you ready for nonprofit administration.
Oh, that's amazing.
And after that, I went to get my master's at Northeastern for higher ed. So higher education.
So wait, you got your undergrad, you got your master's, and after all of that, then you decided to get into music. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty cool because it shows you that we have this perspective in this country that everything has to happen in your 20s, right? Especially when it comes to cultural production. And like, and somehow if you enter your 30s or even your 40s, is you're out of the game. But sometimes, like some of the, when I think about going to a music festival, the headliners, like the great fucking musicians are always people in their 30s all the time. So when I see musicians.
I mean, Café Tacuba.
A huevo.
Right? Like they're like the ones that headline Rido Fest.
Right.
They're like the ones that you want to come and see at the end of the night. Like you're going to buy tickets for all these up and coming acts that are great. But you really want to see these like 30 plus.
Exactly.
Who have amazing repertoires or, you know, music catalogs.
Right. And some of the people doing the most interesting things also that have been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
Okay. So you graduate, you get your master's, and then you're like, I'm going to do some music.
Yeah. So I made a decision after getting my master's degree that I was going to do music full time.
Yeah.
And hardcore, whatever that means. Like, essentially, I was going to flip my priorities. It wasn't going to be about my education anymore because that's done.
Right.
It wasn't going to be about finding a job that fit my educational background at the moment because I was like, I can do that later. And even finding the job at Old Town School of Music, I register people for classes. It's a very entry-level job, but for me, somehow it fits still some sort of educational background. I'm still in a nonprofit institution. I'm still in an educational nonprofit institution. I'm not really working in administration, but at least tengo mi pie en la puerta if ever I want to like consider that.
And that's important because that's another thing that, as we say, living off of your art is very difficult, but having plan A, plan B, and plan C.
Yeah.
Because you never know, man.
Yeah.
You never know. Life is fucking crazy.
It's tough. It's crazy. I think my dad instilled this whole hustler mentality in me. So I was just always like, man, what can I find on Craigslist and flip for an extra $50, $60 here or there?
Yeah.
So I've been hustling, I mean, since 18.
Damn. That's the Latino way, man.
Yeah.
That's the Latino
way. And maybe even younger than that. But I know that once I was done with high school, there was a little bit more freedom for me to hustle, not have to stick to like a 8:30 to 3:30 school schedule.
Right.
I was done with high school. But yeah, no, I graduated and I just made the decision. I was like, you know, for sure, I'm going to do this music. I was already touring when I was in my master's program.
Nice.
And I toured with a group called Gio Chamba from Houston, Texas. And we toured all of Texas.
Is that how you met Pat?
So Vico's the one that knows Pat
more than
me. Yeah.
From the Colores. Shout out, Pat. She's going to be here soon.
I did meet her in Dallas.
Okay.
Recently, actually.
That's awesome.
We were just there to visit Vico's family.
Mm-hmm.
And also kind of just get out of the city and get out of the cold for a while.
Yeah, and see the sun. My God.
Exactly. No se ve en Chicago, man.
But you're from here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you were born. So are you used to it or are you still like...
No.
Are you this Puerto Rican that needs some sunlight?
So Vico brought something to my attention that I guess she's like, when you are too hot, you get so bothered and you just get into a bad mood.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, are you sure you want to be in Puerto Rico? Donde siempre está caliente. And I'm like, yeah, I think so. But I do think that I got used to the cold a little. Like, I do like a good breeze every once in a while. And like, you know, 35 to 40 degrees in Chicago with the sun out is kind of nice.
Yeah.
As opposed to 20 degrees or 16 degrees or peor.
Esto es el diablo, man. I don't understand.
Yeah, man. So it's bad, pero... Puerto Rico, I definitely miss it. I used to go there every summer as a kid. And
I see.
Yeah. So I had the best of both worlds. Or not, actually, the worst of both worlds. I was in Puerto Rico every summer.
In the summer.
And Chicago every
winter.
Yeah.
Damn. You've grown some thick skin.
Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, that's horrible.
So you were touring in your master's program
with
this band.
Man, it was tough. I had 10-page papers to turn in every Monday. Meanwhile,
damn,
I was touring in Texas and stuff like that. So I would have to, like, I did a show, like, the class was just once a week. So we just took all our master's programs and on a Tuesday. And then after Tuesday, I remember I went on tour, had to finish my paper by Monday. But from Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I was in Texas, went to class on Tuesday, then went back to Orlando. And it was just that, I remember that 2 week period, I was just like, what am I doing?
Hustling.
I was really questioning why I was working so hard on this like master's degree. I was like, is this my plan B or is this my plan A?
Right.
I kept asking myself that.
Right.
For now I know the answer, but I feel like it can change.
Right.
Right now, music is going so well. I don't see the need for the plan B just yet.
But it's there.
But at least it's there.
Right.
And so it's like some sort of insurance, and it makes me feel kind of good.
So you're in the stage where you're taking the leap about to just become full-time musician. Okay. And so tell me a little bit more, because we are in a way celebrating that release. You're going to listen to this episode maybe a couple of weeks after we recorded it, but Lester is about to release the first record?
So this is, many people are saying that it feels like my first record.
Right.
So, which is interesting.
Because I know you had other projects.
I've released an EP prior to this in 2016.
Okay. What's the name of that?
The Blue Lion.
Nice.
It was an identity piece on being from the Chicago Blues, and the lion is a symbol of the city of Ponce, Puerto Rico.
Right.
So it was like this idea of being from Puerto Rico and Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very fun project to create, and it was the project that really basically broke me out into Pilsen, and like I did the first show here in Pilsen, Chicago, and the first night 200 people came out.
Wow. It was just, people here in Chicago come out and support, man.
They really do.
Especially in the summer. I've seen such a vibrant community.
Yeah.
Being here for 6 months, within a month I knew like all these Latinx artists, and I saw that they are always helping and supporting each other.
Yeah.
I think it's part of it is because this is not LA, this is not New York. And there's a misconception that those are the main centers. But the reality is that we need to create our own centers.
Yeah.
And there's communities everywhere. I mean, Pat from The Colores, she like the community of musicians she has in Dallas is amazing as well.
Yeah.
So I see that in Chicago. So I can see people supporting you like that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And actually, when we were in Dallas, that's one of the things that we saw. Like, Vico's from Dallas. Right. And being from Dallas, Oak Cliff, she didn't really get too heavily involved in the art scene during her high school years. And then by the time it was time for college, she came to U of C here. But returning back to Dallas, we saw that there was like a really big support system.
Right.
That the artists there were really like trying to make sure that there was space for them. They were getting together just to prop up.
Yeah.
Like one individual or several zinesters or several artists or whatever the case. And it was inspiring. It reminded me a lot of what's going on in Pilsen, Humble Park. And it's inspiring to see people lifting each other up.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
So you had that first project, and now 3 years later, this is...
Yeah, so it's been a while.
Yeah.
For me, it feels like it's been forever.
And from what I remember listening to your music, because I love this new project. And I listened to the other project a while ago, but I remember there's like a clear line between what you were doing and what you're doing today. So tell me a little bit about that, what you're doing right now, and how it differs from the back, for the past project.
I felt like in the past I needed to find, I hate the word gimmick, but I needed to find something that was very much a definitive sound for the name Lester Ray. I was like, this is something I need to figure out, because when I was 18, I was doing reggaeton and hip hop, and I've been doing my own beats since I was 16, and it was always around the hip hop and reggaeton world.
Right.
Did
you feel like you had to do that, or you loved to do that?
When I was 18?
No, when you were like in your late 20s, for example.
Oh, in my late 20s, I was definitely more exploring. I stopped dropping music.
Okay.
I joined a Latin jazz group. I sang with a salsa band. I was doing very caribeño style music, for sure. It's always been that. So when the Blue Lion came around, it was like, let me grab all my history, all my experiences.
Right.
The hip hop, the reggaeton, the salsa, and like, let me come
all up. All of those Caribbean.
Yeah. I was like, let me come up with something that I feel like reflects my skill sets, my ability, but also a style of music that will convey my message.
Right.
Of like unity and bringing people together. And, on the dance floor. And as I was remembering, like, certain styles of music in the past that had done that, I came across Boogaloo.
Right.
And Latin Soul.
Right.
And I saw that. I even asked my dad about it. I was like, "Wow, you're from New York. You were raised in New York exactly during this era."
Yes.
Like, tell me about it. He was a big disco head with roller skates and the afro and stuff like that. So I don't know if he was really deep involved with the Latin scene as much as the disco scene.
Right.
But
the disco scene in New York, for example, it was also Latin, right?
Like, yeah, there was a lot. Yeah. I mean, he's Puerto Rican with the afro, just like roller skating and doing disco. That's and he so was not badass. The only Puerto Rican doing that. So yeah.
That's so cool.
But he wasn't into the son and the montuno and the cha-cha-cha and the mambo. He was more into, like, the disco and the Beatles and, like, just rock and disco.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
But when I asked him about it, he did know the songs. And he was like, yeah, like, he knew some of the artists. He's like, I feel like my dad has more stories that he just doesn't tell me sometimes because he's always working. He's like, olvida las cosas. But I'm like, I bet you probably crossed paths with Willie Colon and Hector Lavoe, and you probably didn't even know it.
It wasn't a big deal.
It wasn't a big deal back then. But it was just, I don't know. Anyways, that era of music was super inspiring because of the fact that it brought black and brown folks together.
Yes.
And it was very much, in my opinion, one of the very first Spanglish genres in America.
Interesting.
So it was like before, like right now Spanglish is the whole craze, right? You have Cuco doing things in different languages.
When I first heard Cuco, I was like, wow, like we have transitioned into a whole new era, because somebody like Cuco 10 years ago, unimaginable. It just would have never happened.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I mean, Latino to lunch as well. Like, it would have not had a Spanglish, you know, like.
It's beautiful. And you have Caliuchis, and you have like just like H.L. There's a lot of Spanglish artists now who are from the U.S. who represent this like Latinx, Latino, like U.S. lived experience, who are making noise in Latin America, in the U.S. and across. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. And I definitely needed to be that. Like, because the music I was writing was something that I always struggled with, was like, should this song be in English? Or should the song be in Spanish?
Right, which we talked about in your listening party, right?
Yeah. And so I would be like, okay, this is a reggaeton song. Oh, but it'd be interesting to do one reggaeton song in English. So, you know, but everything else was in Spanish. Or this is a hip-hop song, so I'll rap in English. And then I'll throw a Spanish part. I was doing Spanglish stuff like 10 years ago. Uh-huh. But Boogaloo was like Spanglish, like the first genre. It was super cool, like, to hear those coros and the call and response in English.
That's so
and the soneos in Spanish.
So tell us a couple of artists so we can put them in the website. Yeah.
Yeah. So Pete Rodriguez, he probably has the most famous Boogaloo song. He calls himself the King of Boogaloo. And he has the song called I Like It Like That. Yes. So that's the one that Cardi B sampled. Yes. Then you have Joe Batan. And Joe Batan is a very interesting figure because he's Filipino and black. And he does, I guess, what people would call Latin soul.
Nice.
And he sings in Spanglish.
That's so
and
cool.
And it's so interesting, his legacy. He's actually sometimes credited with having one of the first rap albums, too. He had a song called Rappo Clappo back in the 70s or something.
That's so cool.
And so he went from Boogaloo to Latin soul to kind of dabbling with salsa when salsa blew up to, like, dabbling with funky rap. He's had an interesting long career. There's an array of others. Man.
No, this having that example of artists, it's perfect. Yeah. Because we need to get like a little perspective of, because, you know, this is your inspiration. Yeah. Is this your main inspiration for what you're doing right now?
It was one of the main inspirations that started, I feel like, my career.
Okay.
It was definitely one of the main inspirations that started my career. It was Latin Soul and Boogaloo. But I felt like where hip hop doesn't sound like hip-hop from the 70s today, and where soul music doesn't even sound like soul music from the 70s today, and neo-soul even has changed from the 90s, and I felt like Latin soul hasn't changed.
And that's one of the things that we were talking about in the listening party, because there's so many aspects. Your introductory song, what's the name of the song again, that track?
Broken Chords.
Yes, Broken Chords. I remember I played it, and I played it twice, and I played it three times, because there's this level of experimentation that in the Latinx community, we see it more and more, but in a way, something new. And I remember, I mentioned this in the party too, that I remember listening to this band called Animal Collective like 10 years ago. And like they had some crazy ass records. And my nephew loved it. And he was like 4. He loved that music. And my sister is like, why are you playing this? I said, because it is a generation of my nephew. It is like the new generations that are, that this type of music is just going to be like normal. It's not even going to be experimental. It's just like what you're doing, you know?
Yeah, it's really cool. Like that song, for example, I just sang it straightforward as an acapella. Mm-hmm. And while I might release that one day, because it sounds really pretty. It's really beautiful. It's just acapella and layers of harmonies. It's been done before. And it's sometimes doing something just to go against the grain because it's been done before isn't the best way to make art.
Right.
But
some of the greatest things come out.
But sometimes, sometimes it can be. So in this instance, we wanted to try it. So I was like, let me sing this acapella, this song I have in my notebook that I wrote a long time ago. And let's flip it. Let's grab these vocals and make them sound like instruments and just do these crazy effects and let's try it out.
And it's beautiful, man.
Thank you.
And it's beautiful. Like, I really like that track. But overall, the concept of the album is so interesting because here you are, Caribeño, Puerto Riqueño, from Chicago, like not from the center, for example, singing about male vulnerability, talking about exploration of gender and identity in a lot of, in a way that it's not new because a lot of kids now have the freedom to do that, but coming from this like male figure, you know, Latinx figure, it's in a way it is new.
And it's new for me. Mm-hmm. So like the first EP was an exploration of cultural identity, trying to figure out more sonically, like what did my experiences sound like? What was it to be Puerto Rican in Chicago?
Right.
And now I feel like this next project is 3 years later, but I felt, it's been a year in the making or more, and I felt like I needed to dig deeper in identity and talk about these intersections that I've never openly talked about.
Right.
And then I even questioned, why haven't I openly talked about it? You know, there's a lot of inspiration that I'm getting also from the younger community as well. Right. So like, seeing kids explore gender and talking about like queerness and stuff like that, just openly.
Como si nada.
It's like, it's super inspiring.
Yeah.
And I remember back in community college, we used to have an event where we would stand on a podium and we would just like queer folks would tell their stories and they would invite allies to come on stage as well. And like, kind of just, share their new experiences with their new friends who were queer or whatnot. And I remember that event used to bring out very little people in the beginning. This is like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it would get bashed sometimes. Right. And then with the years, and I was there for 3 years in community college. So I know you're only supposed to be there for 2, but I was there for 3.
We all have different paths. Yeah.
But I saw it grow within those 3 years. And then I used to come back. I made so many friends with the administrations there and stuff like that. And I saw that the event had turned into like something that was celebrated, like an event that was anticipated and we couldn't wait for it. It became part of like the school's culture as opposed to it being something that was an act of resistance.
Right.
That we're here, we're in your face. Now it was like, we're here, let's celebrate.
Yeah.
And it's changed.
It's normalized in so many ways.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. I think it's inspiring. It's beautiful. Me being as old as I am, just finally getting around to talking about things like this. Right. That's what I meant by it's new for me.
I remember the story that you told us about, because you come from a very religious background.
Yeah.
I remember about you talking about your mom painting her nails and what it means for you to be able to do that now. Tell us a little bit about that, because that's a beautiful story.
Yeah. So, in the church that we grew up in, they were super, super religious. And
you were just telling my husband and I that you actually preach as a kid?
Yeah.
Damn. You know, this is funny because the first interview I did with somebody here in Chicago was my roommate, Luis from Single, Bilingual, and Disque Ready to Mingle. He has his own podcast. But he talks about how he said que se le metían los espíritus y like shit like that. So when you were telling me that, as I was just re-listening to the episode, I was like, oh my God, what is this with this queer Chicago kids? They have like this religious background.
That is Wow. That's actually the kind of church I went to. It was a Pentecostal church.
Mm-hmm.
The people would feel the Holy Spirit and start running around, speaking Amen. In tongues. And yeah, it was a show. But I was always in the band. Ever since I was 5 years old, I was always just like playing congas off to the side. And then when I got old enough, they finally put a mic on the conga. Uh-huh. then I like played keys. I used to sing the worship songs and stuff like that. But the church was really, really strict. So like they had certain rules. If you were playing in the band, you had to wear a tie.
Right.
If you were a woman, you had to wear a skirt. You couldn't paint your nails. You couldn't do your hair.
Y abajo de la rodilla and all mm-hmm. of that.
They,
Lord.
Yeah. It was like, I mean, now it's like a joke to see the jean skirt that goes all the way to your ankle. I feel like I've seen memes or something like that.
Right.
Pero it was a reality for my mom. And I remember my mom would paint her nails and she would go to church. And
escándala.
Yeah. Like, yes. I remember her practice, her, like, she calls it being a feminist. And she's like, para mí, ser feminista era pintarme las uñas y ir a la iglesia.
Damn.
And I was like, era, like, haciéndome el pelo para ir a la iglesia. Like, she would wear really nice dresses
mm-hmm.
that would fall in the mode of what the rules were.
Right.
But they were really flashy.
Right. You like, know? Just pushing the boundaries just enough.
Yeah.
I love your mama. That's awesome.
So she was the one who instilled that on me. Like, I remember we would go to the movies, but she was like, don't tell anybody in church that we go to the movies, because apparently the movies were bad for the church.
Right.
Or like, si yo te compro estos Pokemon cards, don't take them to church, because they'll take them away from you.
Dang, because those are little demons.
Yeah, exactly. No, they used to tell me that, because wow. I would still sneak them into church, and like, I remember una hermana de la iglesia like saw them and she ripped them up, and I guess they had la tinta. It was like the ink, but uh-huh. it was black within the rip of the card.
Right.
And she's like, you see, this is black magic powder that they put inside the Pokemon cards.
Oh my God.
I swear they were all over the top. TV era la caja del diablo. And I was like, come on, yo.
Dios mío.
So it was a really
shout out to
search.
My co-host Fabi, who like has similar stories. Listen to his episode on Radio Menea yeah. where he talks about some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I went to the children's camp, the holiness camp, and it was just wild.
So for you, pintarte las uñas not only is just a way to express your queerness, but it's also an act of feminism.
It's rebellion. It's also something pretty. Like,
right.
I'm enjoying it. I'm right, not right. just like, I'm going to do this because I want to say fuck you to everyone. No, right. I'm actually really enjoying it. I'm actually like putting this on and I'm like, I'm matching it. I love fashion. I love style. I love like just working it. Like,
but I think it's so important coming from people like you, for example, because as you say, now it's normal. So now you see mm-hmm. kids going to high school in high heels, you know, like boys yeah. going. And that's a beautiful thing that they feel that freedom.
Yeah.
But for us, for example, for like
it's
a
still
a
not
bit
something
of,
except exactly. in our age group.
So
yeah.
that's our resistance, like pintando yeah. las uñas. Like to us, that's drag for a lot of us. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Because
yeah.
it's important to express ourselves. And you're doing this, and also I remember the video. Can you tell us a little bit about the music video for the song? I just
Santuario?
That Santuario,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the name of the project, right?
So yeah, the title track is called Santuario. The EP is called Santuario, and then the last song in the EP is called Santuario. It's mm-hmm. kind of to wrap up, this is what the project is about.
Why Santuario?
So it's part of a three-piece project that I want to put out.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's a cycle that I've learned. Mm-hmm. And while the names of the projects in the future might change, it's
right.
basically Santuario, Epifania, and Excommunication.
Okay.
And those are the three projects I want to drop this year.
All tied.
All tied together.
That's so interesting because you're playing with the idea of religion, but also
yeah. So all the
weirdness.
Titles have religious connotations to it,
mm-hmm.
but I want to grab what I did learn from those experiences and apply it to the person.
That you are
personal.
Today.
And to the person I am today, yeah.
yeah.
Santuario is this moment that I need to reflect.
Mm-hmm.
Reflect on things that have happened to me that were negative experiences
mm-hmm.
and ways that I reacted to it that right. might have been negative experiences for others.
I see.
So it's like a reflection of just let me be alone and let me really learn more about how to process emotion.
Mm-hmm.
and what I learned from those emotions, what I learned from processing those emotions, and putting it in a record was a way of finding Santuario.
And that's the song, the single that has the music video.
Yeah.
Which I remember in the listener party, that's where you premiered, and you talked about how somebody said, "Oh, it's beautiful that you have like lipstick, for example."
Yeah, I had like glitter all over my lips, and that was something that I mentioned. One person just brought it to the set and was like, "Who wants glitter on their lips or glitter on their eyes?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, like,
yeah,
let's do it." I was like, "I already have my nails done. I already have jewelry on my hair. Dale, let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it." So there were aspects of the video that were not necessarily planned weeks in advance. It just happened right there in the moment,
right?
Which is beautiful. But the whole video had this color pattern to it. It had this peach and lavender type of aesthetic, where I asked everybody in the cast to wear this color.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a beautiful quote on Out.com or Out Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it was an interview with Femmes, and they were talking about how they don't live in pink or blue, but in the lavender.
Right.
And I was like, what? That's perfect.
That's beautiful.
Like, that's exactly. I was like, the Santuario music video has this predominantly like lavender color
background.
And it has this image of what masculinity, first, it proposes a healthier form of masculinity.
Right.
And then second of all, it also shows you that the spectrum of masculinity is so wide as well.
Yeah.
And like, there's people in it who are just really kind, straight, cis men, women who are mask identifying and who just portray a very like different proposition of what normally we see in media, of what masculinity can be.
Right.
Or intersex folk are in the video as well, where they just like, you know, the masculine and feminine can both live within one body. And
I think it shows in the video. I think you really did a good job. What's the name of the director?
Alex Palmer.
Yes. So I think Alex did a beautiful job on encapsulating some of these ideas.
Yeah.
Just by having like all of you sit down and just like, like sing to the camera.
He was such a big part to this entire project. So he used to run events called the Dojo.
Mm-hmm.
They were DIY shows that would happen actually very close to here in Pilsen.
Mm-hmm.
And he like set rules on the door, making sure that everyone knew that we were walking in here, we were all inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
We did performance art, rap, rock, punk. It was just a variety of music that we would do at the Dojo, but at the same time, there was like visual arts, and it was just different. It was like, it was unlike anything I had seen in Chicago.
Nice.
Especially not in like established venues. Mm-hmm. This was a house,
right,
that he had turned into a venue.
And that's the thing, like, you can create your own santuarios, right? Like, you can create your own spaces.
Yeah.
So in the listener party, it was in a space turned into a gallery.
Yeah.
You had curators of color, because you wanted to have this idea that listening to the party is like enjoying art.
Yeah.
And then you had music critics, and then you had local musicians, and you create your own santuario when it came to that, that listener party. And I feel like that's a little bit what you're offering us with your album.
Yeah, I feel like it was first a release for me to find santuario, and then I realized that, oh, this is also something that people can just put on their earbuds and kick back and just listen to it.
Yeah.
Because the vibes feel good, but also to promote that, you know, you can do this yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're all networks. They're all like collaborations with people. The producers I worked with, people of color, the directors, the DJs, the cast on the listening party. Like, it's all people I admire. It's all people who I love working with. It's all people who, rightfully so, in their own lane, are just fucking killing it.
Right.
So it's beautiful to work with other people. And I think that was one of the resulting elements of the Santuario project. It's like, once you're alone with your own thoughts and reflection, it's very important to then connect with other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important that after you're in your sanctuary, which for me, it's finding sanctuary within myself because of the fact that I've moved around so much.
Why?
And so I couldn't find it in my bedroom. I couldn't find it in a house because I was not stable for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I found it within me, and I had to make sure that I needed to find it within me. But after that reflection period, I think it's important to share with others. Like, go out, visit them in their house, invite them over to your house, go out for a drink or whatever, just dance.
Yeah.
It's important to just be able to share space with good people.
And that's what I was going to say. Like, this is a good, it's a good way to wrap up the interview, because we need to support brown musicians. We need to support Latinx musicians. We need to support queer musicians. And it doesn't necessarily have to just always be in the international, like, stars that you see. Yeah. But all of them started in the community. All of them started locally. So support local music. Go to the shows. Download the music. And if you don't find a santuario, you create your own. And there's always going to be people. You're going to be so surprised. There's always going to be people that are going to support.
That never ceases to amaze me, to be honest. Like, the amount of support that comes out after a project drops or before a project drops, or just when people see that you're just out here doing what you want to do and living your truest self. I think that also just attracts positive vibes. It puts out positive vibes to the world. And I think that it attracts the right people into your circles. It's a beautiful feeling to work with just the right people.
Right.
Even if it takes forever to find the right people, I think it's so worth it.
When you do.
When you do, yeah.
So before we go, as a musician and as an odd to our friend Richard in Song Mess, tell me, give me some recommendations of some Latinx music, perhaps local, that you are listening to right now.
So just I have to definitely, you said Latinx, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, because the features in the project, I would definitely recommend. Mykel DeVille and Rick Wilson. Not Latinx, though. Latinx groups in Chicago, man, they range from young to like my age and older that have been killing it in Chicago. Like, I have to start off with Dos Santos.
Yes. Oh, my God. I really love Dos Santos.
Yeah, yes. I really, truly enjoy their music. I play that on Spotify when I'm driving in the car. It's their evolution has been extremely enjoyable to listen to.
And I think they're one of the most known local bands right now, right? Because they're everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. They've toured. They've been playing outside of Chicago as well, so they've been making a lot of noise for Chicago.
Yeah,
and I would say they're probably one of the first big Latinx bands in our modern era, because before them, Los Vicios de Papá were already making a lot of noise.
Nice.
And Eso Afro Jam Funk Beat is nice. Have you seen them?
No, not yet.
Oh man, I gotta invite you.
I haven't seen
those
Santos either. I need to.
What?
Yeah, it's just. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to invite you to these shows, because Eso does funk and cumbia, and they are super tight, and it's a very fun party to go to.
That's cool.
And then Dos Santos experiments with cumbia and psychedelic, right? And it's like really, really fun. Then you have groups that play like traditional styles of music, but they're like modernizing it. So A Flor de Piel they used to play a lot of son jarocho, and they play with a lot of traditional instruments, but they give it like a twist that is definitely very Chicago and very modern.
Right.
And then there's a group in Humboldt Park that I really enjoy called Bomba Kumbuya, and they play traditional bomba rhythms, but they're so on point. And the singer, Ivelisse, she has an amazing voice.
Nice.
I really do enjoy a lot of the music that's been coming out of Chicago. Even recently, you have like this bedroom pop, Victor Cervantes, I think is his name. But he just goes by Victor Internet. Mm-hmm. And he does like bedroom pop or new wave, R&B.
There's everything here.
Yeah. There's so much here. Man, you have Baby Jig, who's doing reggaeton.
Avantis, who's doing like
Avantis,
hardcore.
Oh yeah. Okay, so Avantis is really interesting, because personally, I did not grow up on metal or in a really crazy rock environment.
Yeah,
it was always either like tropical merengue or it was gonna be R&B, soul, and urbano type music. So I was definitely in the back in the day when it was like reggaeton or rock en español. I was definitely the reggaeton.
I was a rock en español person. Yes,
which is funny because now everyone's just like working together and blending. And I got the rock en español people that were now saying like they love reggaeton. So yeah, it is what it is. But Avantis has made me fall so deeply in love with rock.
Yeah,
like
because they're
great.
They're doing it's.
I'm assuming you've seen them live?
No, I haven't seen them live. Heard I just their music. Like the other day I went in the rabbit hole and I watched so many of their videos and they're just so well crafted. Such good music.
You have to see them live.
I know. I heard
they are very fun to watch live.
Oh my god, and I can't wait.
Yeah. So Avantis is definitely making a lot of noise and shout too. They've recently been making new waves in Chicago.
So okay, so we have Dos Santos, Avantis. What were the other three that you mentioned? There were three more, I think.
Oh, was the list just three? I went off on like this whole.
I mean it was a lot, but I'm just trying to like encapsulate the Chicago bands that you talked about. So Avantis, yeah. Dos Santos,
Eso,
for
right. sure. I mentioned Victor.
Victor Internet, mm-hmm. yes.
A Flor de Piel.
A Flor de Piel. That was the other one that I was missing. Okay.
Yeah.
So those are that's a
and
good.
Bomba Kombuya.
Bomba Kombuya. My God, that's so great. Okay, but so feel free to come back whenever you want to, because I feel we're just starting to scratch the surface on not only music in Chicago, but talking about these big topics and big themes and show that the exploration of sexuality and gender, it has so many faces. And you bring a face to that it's different, that we yet to see. And for that, like, I thank you so much. And I know a lot of people are very appreciative of that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to hear, to be honest. I get a little shy when people tell me that they love the music and stuff like that. It's still because, you know, I'm just creating it and having fun, but I'm also purposefully hoping that it does make an impact.
Right.
But when I see people tell me that it does, I still get a little nervous and
get used to it, because the record's about to drop and you're going to hear that more and more often. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much for promoting your record with us. And next time you come here, make sure to eat more
so we can talk more about better food. Yeah.
So instead of pastries and coffee.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, I also had waffles, coffee, and matcha this morning. So I'm in
Humboldt Park, and there's actually really good Puerto Rican pastries, pero como tan across the park, and I'm on the other side, like.
I didn't get
up in enough time. I could even have better pastries than the ones I did have.
Bueno, pues, Lester, muchísimas gracias. And I'm sure you're going to be back.
Yeah. I'm glad. I would be glad to be back.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And yes, so I will be here next time that we interview another cultural shaker here in Chicago. Hello, audience of Latinos Who Lunch. As you guys know, here we are cultural critics, and we always talk about our representation of POCs. And recently, we just went to see a movie where there's no POC representation, but that's okay. We saw Dumbo. Did you like Dumbo?
Yeah.
What did you like about it? Yes, I know exactly. Hi, that was my nephew, Samir, by the way. So, Josie, tell us a little bit more about Dumbo.
A flying elephant.
A flying elephant? Did you thought that was weird?
No.
Did you like that?
Yeah.
Do you wish you had a flying elephant?
Yes.
What would you do with a flying elephant?
Fly on it.
You will fly on it? Yeah. Samir, what will you do with a flying elephant?
The vet?
Uh-huh. What will you do with it?
The grease.
¿Y qué más? ¿Qué más harías con el elefante? That's what I thought. So you guys were just cooking with Meme, right? You were making a cake?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about making that cake with Meme.
We had strawberries.
What else, Samir?
I mean.
What else did you do with the cake?
Grandma, we have butter, we have cream cheese. We have sugar, we have butter.
That sounds insane. It sounds like it's going to give me a heart attack. At what time are we going to be able to eat this cake? I'm pretty hungry.
Soon?
Soon.
Okay, so from 1 to 10, what grade will you give your baking experience? And from 1 to 10, what grade will you give Dumbo, the baking experience, from 1 to 10?
Butter,
from 1 to 10, how much?
Number 10.
Number 10.
What about Dumbo from 1 to 10?
Number 10.
From 1 to 10, Samir, what do you give Dumbo?
Tell me.
Tell me from 1 to 10.
10.
10. There you have it. I give it a 0, but my nephews give it a 10. Don't go see this movie. Bye. Pues ahí lo tienen, amigos. Mi veredicto de la película Dumbo. But most importantly, the voice of my nephews. Girl, they're giving me so much life. It's amazing. It's amazing. I don't know. I just spent hours talking to my nephew, and we've been baking, and it's, I don't know. I guess I'm getting old, you guys, but I find pleasure in the little things in life. But also, how amazing was that interview? Lester Reyes is doing amazing things here in Chicago. Thank you so much, Lester. Thank you for inviting me to your listening party. I think I talked about it a little bit a while ago, but it was amazing. He had all this incredible people in the panel, and it was cool because we actually sat down. We listened to each single track of the album, and we talked about everything from feelings to the history of music. And it was put in a context, and at the end of the night, we came out with this idea of this amazing product that he created and all the people that made that possible. So thank you again for the invitation. Thank you again for coming to Latinos Who Lunch. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And make sure to, again, Google it. Go to our show notes and get some information from Lester. But I don't want to go before... I don't have recommendations this week because Lester gave you an array of recommendations and people to listen to here from Chicago. So I just wanted to remind you guys that Justin Favelas and Ramiro Gomez, or Justin Favela, a.k.a. Favi Fav, and our friend Ramiro Gomez just opened their new exhibition in Las Vegas, Barrick Museum of Art. This is part of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. The name of the show is Sorry for the Mess. It opened last week, April 11, and it's going to run through all the way to, through August. The exhibition, it's incredible. The exhibition, it's about the relationship that Ramiro Gomez and Justin have with Las Vegas, but also the relationship between their history with Vegas, part of their imaginary, part of their dreams, part of them growing up, but also the histories of labor behind the upbringing of Ramiro and Justin. Ramiro's he grew up in LA, but he has all these connections with Las Vegas. And as you know, Favi is from Vegas and he has all these amazing stories. So the exhibition develops in this, like, a beautiful dream narrative. And you go from one part of the exhibition to the other and you really get a sense. You really get a sense of the process of them growing up from references of them being kids all the way to adults, music, television shows, movies, references to different casinos, different art in different casinos. It's amazing. You have to see it. Please make sure to stop at the Barrick Museum, the Marjorie Barrick Museum of Art. And this is part of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. The exhibition is Sorry for the Mess. And hopefully as soon as Favi and I have a chance to sit down and talk a little bit more, we will actually get into it because I want him to tell you a little bit more about the exhibition. It opened on April 12th, and it's going to be on view at the Marjorie Barrick Museum through August 3rd. So again, thank you to my sister for allowing me to do a mini interview with my nephew and my niece. Thank you for Lester Ray to sit down with us. I hope he didn't mind that I just inserted this video clip. Ay, güey, pues que me creo YouTuber o qué chingados. For this little clip. And thank you, everybody. We'll come back with more amazing interviews next week. Thank you for your patience. I promise you, Favi is coming back soon. We are getting our stuff together so we can do more Guara Guara La Cucharas because we need to catch up. But also, remember to... I forgot to tell you. Let me tell you this right now before I forget, because Favi is going to kill me. So if you are in Austin or if you're in the area surrounding Austin, Texas, please come and join us. We have a live Latinos Who Lunch at the University of Texas. This is going to happen on Friday, April 19th, and at 3 p.m. And this is an amazing opportunity, you know, for us to meet our listeners, but also we're going to talk about, you know, our thing, the things that we love, the things that we hate. And we're, of course, going to talk about food. This is, again, Latinos Who Lunch live at UT, April 19, at 3 p.m. This is at the SAC, again, at the SAC. And this is an event co-sponsored and made possible by the Latino Studies College of Liberal Arts of UT, the Gender and Sexuality Center, and the Multicultural Engagement Center at the University of Texas at Austin. Latinos Who Lunch live at UT. Also, if you are in town, you are also, I'm sure you know about Fusebox Festival. This is an amazing festival that brings together artists, performers, podcasters. And on Saturday, this Saturday, April 20th, Favi Fav and I are going to sit down with Roberto Jackson Harrington. We're also going to sit down with Alexandra Robinson, Cara Martinez, and Aaron Gentry, and we're going to talk about or discuss our experiences as bypassing Latinx people. So again, if you are in Austin as part of Fusebox podcast edition, this is going to be the panel title. It's not a panel, it's more like a conversation. It's called White Passing, Saturday, 12 p.m. And this is part of Waffle Shots. Waffle Shots. Okay, my accent is kicking in. Waffle Chats, which is a series of conversations throughout the festival. It happens every day, and this is going to take place at Fusebox Hub. This is in 1300 East 5th Street, again in Austin, Texas. Once again, as part of Fusebox Festival, Latinos will launch in conversation with other cultural creators, and this is going to take place on Saturday at noon, April 20th, Fusebox Hub, 1300 East 5th Street. And of course, if you guys remember and if you want to, go to iTunes, rate us five stars only, because that gives us more visibility. And as you guys know, visibility leads to representation and representation matters. Also, make sure to send us your emails. We're getting ready to start answering them again. And send us to lwlpod@gmail.com. Again, thank you so much. Favi, I miss you. ¿Dónde andas, cabrón? And thank you, everybody. Ciao, ciao, ciao.